but it was a big corporation, and they said, "We'll give you this much money if we can use these photos for a year." And I said, "Where do I sign?" And, and that gave me enough money. I mean, at that point, I was like, "I'm going to have to get a job." And I was kind of bartending a little bit and doing odd stuff here and there. And, but that gave me enough money to like say, "Okay, I can make it here for another six or eight months, and then I'll see what happens."
So this was my casual conversation episode with California-based photographer Josh Wool. And the reason why this is a casual conversation instead of a formal interview is just, it didn't feel like one. Josh is so down to earth and easy to talk to. About 20 minutes in, I just abandoned most of my interview questions and just talked to him. I think Josh's story is a great example of how it's never too late to change paths, and how with enough time and genuine effort, you can make creativity a viable career. So let's get into it. Casual Conversations episode 2 with Josh Wool. Hydrated, we're good to go.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So it's funny, usually, or I guess maybe in the past, like episodes, like 5, 10 episodes ago, I would do like a whole like intro and lead in. But nowadays, I just kind of start just talking normal, more normally. So let's see where to begin. So I guess I can start with the reason why I reached out to you in the first place. One day, I was just kind of like scrolling, you know, through Instagram as I do, trying to find like, you know, new photographers to follow, new inspiration, things like that. And then I came across your page, and it was in a time where I was kind of like thinking, you know, they often say like, okay, you need to be a photographer of a certain type of niche. You have to find like, you know, your lane, so to speak. And I was kind of bouncing back and forth between different things that I enjoy shooting. And then I was kind of toying with the idea that I didn't necessarily want to be with one specific thing. Cause I'm like, well, you do it over and over again, you get bored. Like how interesting can being the same, how interesting can being the same type of photographer be long-term? And I came across, you know, your account and saw, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of portraits. Yeah, and I was like, well, I mean, I do like exactly. I was like, you know, okay, like this guy seems to have put it together and made it work, and his work is awesome. So does it just take this long length of time to do it? Like, how did he kind of accomplish that? So that's more or less the reason why I decided, like, all right, this maybe this could be a good way to find my answer. So did you, when you first started photography, you know, many years ago now, when did you first start out by taking portraits first, or were you kind of in a different lane doing something else?
I started out early on just by doing sort of walking around my neighborhood and doing urban landscapes and things like that. I just had surgery on my hands and my elbows, so I was out of work for, or off work for 2.5 months, and I was kind of going crazy sitting around the house, and I needed to get some exercise anyway, so I would just kind of tie my dog to my waist with a leash and walk around the neighborhood to try to build my stamina back up, because the surgery's just kind of knocked me on my butt for a while. But pretty early on, I gravitated towards shooting people and making portraits, and I didn't necessarily know that was what I wanted to do. I really didn't have, it was just sort of a hobby, and it was something I was exploring to do in my, what limited free time I had. But once I started photographing people, I realized that I really enjoyed it, and sort of clicked for me. And this, I always really enjoyed photography, or looking at photography, and I always sort of gravitated towards portraits and in both photography and painting and things like that. So I think it was sort of a natural progression for me. And I've always been interested in people. So it's sort of, I think it just sort of happened. Sort of fell into it naturally. And I also, and, you know, that's, I also wasn't I'm very good at shooting much else.
I mean, that's smart. You found what you were good at. You knew where your money was going to be, so kept progressing in that lane.
Yeah, I've always found that, you know, if I'm not interested in something, I have a really hard time putting a lot of time and effort into it. But if I'm interested in it, yeah, I can, you know, dive pretty deep and get pretty involved. So it's sort of been like that with everything in my life. So sort of made sense.
You know, it's crazy because, and I did another interview with an awesome like street photographer, Ulysses, a few weeks ago. And I was saying to him, I was like, you know, I feel like the progression with photography is really interesting, like when compared to other things, because it's like you just start out and you're like, OK, well, let me take a picture of my desk. Let me take a picture of my wall. Let me take a picture of anything. And, you know, you're just trying to find, like, you know, kind of why I'm doing this, what I actually enjoy shooting, what I actually get value out of. And then everyone kind of stumbles into a different path. Some people do concerts. Some people do people like you are. Some people do product, food, whatever. And then the paths just kind of diverge in different directions. And you just kind of find your journey that way, which it's really cool. But also via my research, I saw that you in your previous life, quote unquote, used to be a chef. So tell me about that career path. That seems kind of an artistic pursuit in its own right, but definitely not necessarily, I would think you would be a photographer after that.
Right. I mean, there are artistic things with food, but I look at it more of as a trade. I went to college and pretty quickly realized that after 12 years of school and a couple of years of college, I was just tired of being in school. I wanted to do something different, and I started working in restaurants in high school for, you know, pocket money and, you know, to be able to afford the things that I wanted to do. And I worked through college, right. and I always enjoyed being in restaurants, and I always enjoyed food, and I just remember, you know, I'd taken a little break from college for a year and did some traveling and was working, and I went back for a little while, and I was just like, this is not what I want to do. And at the time, you know, the idea of cooking, which I was already doing, sounded like an interesting choice. At that time, the Food Network wasn't as big as it is now, and chefs, the celebrity chef thing was not really happening.
Yep.
The late 90s, and there was starting to, but there's still a lot of stigmas around the restaurant business, and but I decided to leave college and go to culinary school, and ended up working for a couple of restaurants while I was in school, and found that I really enjoyed it, and sort of dug into it after that, and pretty early on kind of worked my way up to the kitchens and ended up running a restaurant by the time I was 25. So, our kitchen anyway. And then from 25 to 24, 25 till my early 30s, that's pretty much all I did. 6 days a week, 12 months a year.
And that's actually something I wanted to get into, is like the time dump somewhat, because I just feel like all my friends there are the family members who have ever worked in a restaurant tell me that's, all right, like, this is, one, extremely difficult, and two, it's extremely time consuming. So, I mean, I know you were saying you're the type of person that when you kind of find something you like, you can really dig into it.
Yeah.
Was it tough staying dug into to being a chef?
In my 20s, it really wasn't. I found it pretty easy to just focus on work, and, you know, I was very determined to I've always sort of been determined to be the best at something, but do the best that I can do at it. Cause I know that, bless you.
Thank you.
I mean, there's always going to be somebody who's better. Like, no matter what you do and no matter how hard you work, there's always going to be somebody better. So for me, it was always really focusing on doing the best that I could do and really challenging myself. So in my 20s, it was really easy to do because you're young and you have energy, and you know. But you get into your 30s and priorities change a little bit. And you look at, you know, I was 30 years old, and I was like, you know, I don't see my friends, I don't see my family, and I don't really get vacation time. The quality of life isn't the greatest, you know. Plus, it's, you know, your body starts to take a toll on your body and mentally, and you know, it's a tough industry. I think it was great in my 20s, and then as I got into my 30s, I sort of realized that if I didn't make some changes, that I didn't really like where I was going to be at 40 or 50. So,
yeah.
And then also, you know, some injuries made a big impact on that too, and helped make a choice for me as well. So,
yeah, that's interesting, because if just like how you're saying, like the whole celebrity chef, like more Hollywood style of things that it is now, do you think maybe if you had maybe been born a little bit later, you know, if you were starting this whole pursuit and you're say 23, 24, 25, and maybe like now, do you think you would have found more of a career path out of it compared to back in the day?
I mean, I found a pretty good career path out of it. I have no complaints, but I didn't really have any desire to be, you know, a TV chef or a, you know, famous. I don't really have,
okay.
I don't really have any desire to be famous in general. I just, you know, it's not my motivation. But I'm glad I got into it when I did. Cause it was really just about food. There wasn't any of the other, there's always PR involved, and good marketing and things like that. But I think today to be a really successful chef, you have to be, and it's like anything else, you have to be really good at what you do, and you also have to be very savvy to media and to image and all this other kind of stuff. And it's for, you know, you also have to be a bit lucky and hit the right investors and, you know, kind of hit all the right buttons for things to work. And the other part of it too is it's just a really volatile business, and as we're seeing now with COVID, you know, I have friends who've shut their restaurants down, and you know, you can't go out to eat anywhere. If you do, you put your life at risk. So, I'm glad I got out when I did.
Yeah. But actually, before I kind of transition, moving on to, you know, photography, your main thing now, did you specialize in anything cooking wise?
Yeah, I'm curious. You know, I was doing a lot of Southern regional food. A lot of pretty early into the farm to table movement. So we were taking a lot of local Southern ingredients and sort of elevating them using a lot of French and European technique. But all still very, I guess simple is the right word, but you know, it was nothing overtly fancy. It was elegant, but it wasn't a lot of bells and whistles. It was just sort of highlighting the ingredients and bringing out the best qualities in them and pairing them together in ways that were interesting, and still paying sort of homage to the tradition.
I like that. And so, all right, so the photography, or the photography, the food chef kind of aspect of or part of your life is, you know, slowly coming to an end, and that injury, like you were saying, knocks you out. So you came to New York. Why?
I got a job actually as a chef in New York. I'd come up to visit a friend and went to the restaurant she was working at, and ended up meeting the owner, who was also the chef, and we got to talking over brunch one day, and he was like, I'm opening up another restaurant. I need somebody to come run this kitchen. And I was looking to get out of Tennessee. And
I'm your man.
I was like, I'll be there in 2 weeks. And so I did that for about 6 months. But I realized that after having surgery on my hands, I was fairly limited in what I could do. on a day-to-day basis physically. But I also had been through a lot of other, it's a really long story with a couple of other restaurants that a lot of ups and downs and a lot of sort of blood, sweat, and tears that didn't work out, you know, with other restaurants. And,
yeah.
And so I think I was just sort of physically done, and then mentally just I wasn't into it anymore, and was really looking at the quality of life issues and how I wanted to live my life, and spending 80 hours a week in a restaurant really wasn't what I wanted to do. My heart just said, find something different. But yeah, I think I got to a point where I was just physically needed to do something else, and then also mentally needed to do something else. And I just, you know, poured 12, 15 years of my life into something, and was just ready for change. I didn't know what that was at the time. but yeah, so when I worked that last job in New York for like 6 months, and then I had some money saved. And then I sold my car, and that sort of gave me enough to live on for 10 months or a year. And so I just said, you know what, I'm going to hang out in New York for a while and take a breather and see what happens and take some pictures in the meantime. And sort of by the end of that first year, I'd started making a little money with photography, and it was like, maybe I'll explore this and see what it is. And, you know, how many more chances am I going to have to live in New York and try something new? So,
yeah,
I guess all those years of not having vacations paid off, because I had, you know, a bit of savings for once. Now,
I mean, that, I guess that's the long-term benefit of, you know, over a decade of of working yourself yeah, to the bone, I guess.
Yeah, if you want to save money working in a restaurant, you'll never have money, and you'll never have time to spend your money.
I guess a catch-22, I guess you could say it is, yeah, somewhat of being in that situation. But when it came to, or what was kind of interesting to me, like hearing about this, so you go from, you know, down south life to come up to New York for a specific reason, and then 6 months into that, which isn't really, you know, a ton of time to get acclimated to your surroundings, especially if you're working all the time, you know, you're kind of just living basically and seeing what you can make happen. So what was it like experiencing the city through that lens of not someone who, you know, not knowing whether you're going to stay, whether you're going to go, and just kind of taking it all in? What was the transition like?
It was interesting. I mean, I'd been to New York a bunch of times. We used to come up to check out restaurants and eat, and so it wasn't completely new, but I mean, it's a bit of a culture shock, you know, going from a smaller mm-hmm. southern town to, you know, a city with 8.5 million people. But it was, I mean, I really enjoyed it early on. I mean, just walking down the street and you hear people speaking in 4 or 5 different languages, and you know, there's great food, there's great music, there's great art. But I mean, living in New York is a grind too. So,
yep.
I think the biggest adjustment for me was the travel times and the subways and, you know, dealing with commute and things like that. But once I was able to break New York down into neighborhoods, mm-hmm. It felt a lot less intimidating. And so, like, okay, well, I'm just going from this neighborhood to that neighborhood, and I see how these places connect. And once you kind of get the geographic lay of the land, at least for me, it was a lot easier to manage.
You know, that's interesting, because, I mean, I feel like city dwellers, they have like a certain savvy in terms of direction and just the way they're, just to know their surroundings, really. Like, they can really break down to you, oh, this is on this street, and you go a mile up this way, you take a left, you take another left, and you're going to come out of this. It's like they can really break it down Right. Whereas, you know, me personally, I live in kind of more of a rural area, so I'm just like, ah, it's like to the left over there.
Yeah, I think the most disorienting thing for me was like coming out of the subways and trying to figure out what direction was like north, south, east, and west. Like,
yeah,
like, there's so many times I would come out of the subway and walk like half a block the wrong way, and then realize that turn around and go back the other way. But you get the hang of it pretty quick, you know. You do that a couple of times, and then once you realize that Manhattan is pretty much a grid, you know, it's pretty easy to figure out if you're going around.
Gotcha. And so I know you're saying, you know, after spending a little time there, you started to slowly but surely kind of get some photography opportunities here and there. How did those kind of come about? Was it more of like a word of mouth, like, hey, I have my buddy Josh, he's a photographer, he can do X, Y, and Z for you? Or did you kind of pound the pavement and find your opportunities that way?
It was a little bit more organic. I started just photographing as many people as I could, and then Tumblr was fairly big at that time.
Oh yeah, that's true.
That's kind of where all my early initial exposure came from, and but they had an editorial section for a while, and they posted that they were looking for stories with people who use Tumblr. So I set myself up with a 10-week series of portraits and interviews of people around Manhattan and Manhattan, Brooklyn, Bronx, who were Tumblr users, but were also working in all sorts of different fields. And it was just a way for me to get to know people and sort of put my foot in the water, so to speak. And so I ended up doing that, and that got a lot of exposure. And then I ended up, one of the people that I photographed for that really liked the photos, and they worked for a big company, and they ended up licensing a number of those photos, and that was like my first big paycheck. Nice. It came like 4 or 5 months after I did the photos, and it was completely unrelated. But it was a big corporation, and they said, we'll give you this much money if we can use these photos for a year. And I said, where do I sign? And and that gave me enough money. I mean, at that point, I was like, I'm going to have to get a job. And I was kind of bartending a little bit and doing odd stuff here and there. And, but that gave me enough money to like say, okay, I can make it here for another six or eight months, and then I'll see what happens. And from there, things sort of slowly started to build. A lot of it was word of mouth, and a lot of it was me sending out emails and trying to network as much as I could. And I've never been great at that.
Me neither.
You know, it's not fun, and it's a game that, you know, you just have to play, I think, especially in
New York. Necessary evil.
But a lot of it comes from, you know, just you meet random people through New York, I would just reach out to people that I wanted to photograph or that I found interesting, and that would lead to something down the line. And it was never an immediate thing. It's like, it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to photograph you. Like, okay, here's a big check. It was like, oh, I worked with this person last year, and they were really, you know, I really enjoyed working for them, and I happened to work in that agency, and let's get Josh to bid on this with two other people. So it's a slow, very slow progression. You know, and I got some lucky breaks, and was kind of in the right place at the right time. And you know, it was at the beginning of, well, it was at the sort of height of Tumblr, when there was a lot of eyes on Tumblr and people using Tumblr, and then the beginning of Instagram. And, I mean, I was actually probably a little late to the game with Instagram, but yeah, most of the exposure came through social media, and then that one thing sort of led to another. And, but it's a lot of ups and downs. You know, there's a lot of times where the phone didn't ring and there was no emails coming in, and And then other times we'd be really crazy busy, and then that's just the life of freelance. It's like, I think we're all sort of chasing the goal of being, you know, consistent. And now throw COVID in there, it's all out. Like everything that any of us have learned is out the window. So, you know, so much fun.
So. When it comes to, you know, those kind of earlier, like, first sort of moments or breaks, I guess you could call them, it's so kind of, it's funny that, you know, I've seen this happen, you know, in my life, and then also in those of my peers, who it's like, just as things are really starting to look dire and you don't think you're going to be able to pull it out, something just somehow appears. It's just like, when you put kind of that energy in the right direction and you do it for long enough, somehow, some way, something's going to work out. it's amazing how that kind of happens.
Yeah, young photographers always ask me, like, what do I need to do to be a good photographer, to be successful? And I said, you need endurance. Like, that's the number one thing. if you quit, you know, if you're at it for 2 years and you quit, you know, that what might have happened in third, fourth, fifth year, you're never going to know about it. If you're at it for 10 years and you quit, you don't know what's going to happen at 12 years or 15 years. And, you know, you have to really love what you're doing and be willing to suffer for it, I think, in the beginning. And it's not really suffering if you're enjoying what you're doing. Like, if you're only in photography to make money, you're in the wrong business. It's much like anything else. Like, if you're in a restaurant business to make money, you're in the wrong business. You have to love the act of making photos or the act of making food or working with people. It doesn't matter. If you're in it for the money, you might as well just go work on Wall Street, because there's a whole lot easier ways to make money than the photography, you know. And that's the thing. If you're passionate about it, you just keep at it. You keep moving forward. You know, it may not feel like you're making much progress, but if you step back and look at the macro sort of view and the wide view of it, you know, I do that all the time. I look back and look, okay, I was in New York for almost a decade, and, you know, maybe I'm feeling not great because things have been quiet for a couple of weeks. You know, I'm like, oh, I'm not good at this or whatever, or I have doubts, and I step back and say, like, all right, what have I done in 10 years? And, you know, it's not monumental, but for someone with no photo background and no art background to just switch careers in their mid-30s and make a new career and make a bit of a name for myself in a pretty short time, it's like, okay, I gotta cut myself a little bit of slack and be myself a little bit, you know, to kind of quit whining and just put my nose to the grindstone and keep going.
Exactly. And the funny thing is, it's like, it almost, what's the term for, I guess they call it long tail. I think you just build up a lot of that momentum and kind of long tail over those months and years and over again. And whether you realize it or not, it's like, things are kind of hopefully working, you know, behind the scenes in your favor. But, and that's just like how you're saying, it's like, you quit on Wednesday and you never know what could happen on Thursday if you just kept going just that little bit. And I think it's that temptation sometimes that keeps you going, you know, that you don't really know what's around the next corner. And I think, you know, while the freelance life is so up and down, like, that's, I guess, kind of the high that you get from, or some of the excitement that you get from, is like, it's that can kind of keep you going maybe through those harder moments, which I think is a great lesson for young artists of any, or young creators of any kind of type to learn. It's definitely weird.
Yeah. I mean, an early mentor for me told me, it's like, success is a byproduct of hard work. You know, it's not, Success isn't the end goal. It's just it's the result. You know, it's the byproduct rather than, you know, making it work is what's important.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's momentum is a big part of it too. You know, there are times where I felt like early on where I was kind of climbing that hill and climbing that hill, and you know, it's one little job after another little job, and you know, but I felt like, you know, as people are seeing the work and, you know, you're seeing your name out there, and it's like that, that builds, and it's easy to kind of come to a stop, you know, and slow down. But that's the importance of like doing personal work. And, you know, I don't necessarily agree with this need to always post work, you know. I mean, it's good to have people, if you're, it's good to be fresh in people's minds, but I think if you're just making work to put it out there, that could be detrimental. You know, if it's not up to par, or it's not, you know, something that's on brand for you, or, you know, if you're just doing it to fill space, I don't think that's good. But I think if you're consistently putting out work that you believe in and work that you're proud of, whether it's paid or not, you know, that's a good way to kind of build that momentum.
And it's interesting that you say that, because I think that's very much the situation I kind of found myself in. And that I, especially when I mean, when I first started photography, I didn't think of it as a career at all. I just wanted to have fun with it, and just take some cool outfit photos. But as it goes on, and I started to kind of make my, which is, you shouldn't do this, by the way, disclaimer for anyone, who's thinking of going this direction. I started to kind of make my photography revolve around social media and revolve around, you know, building a fan base or some type of following. And I just realized you would get burnt out so quickly, you know, 3 months of doing it, and you're just like, oh, it's not going the way I want it to go, et cetera, et cetera. And you stop. But when I was able to get outside of that and just start doing it just because I love taking photographs and find the photographs that really motivated me, then that's when I could do it for a year, 2 years, whatever, and just not really slow down. And that's an important thing, especially now, to know. Because I mean, maybe 20 years ago, that wasn't necessarily a focus. People were worried about like, oh, my social media and my brand presence. But now, you know, people get into it with that mindset of, okay, like that's the real motivation, and that's it's not going to keep you going.
It's not sustainable.
And so, getting back to, I guess, like the timeline of your life, I guess we could say, what were those first early jobs like? I know, I mean, in the photography experiences I've had so far, it's like sometimes you go in with all the best intentions and everything just goes up in smoke, and then other times you don't really have any plan and it goes really well. So, you know, what, did you ever find yourself kind of in that situation of like, oh man, this is a rough day, you know? Just kind of like hitting that wall somewhat, or?
Yeah, there's always times where, you know, early on, because I didn't have a lot of experience, because I didn't assist other photographers early on, I didn't have, maybe didn't know all of the etiquette or the rules or the protocols for some shoots, and, but I also asked around, and you know, asked people who are friends or colleagues, you know, I was like, well, you know, how does this work, and what do I need to look out for? So, I did run into, I didn't run into any major problems. Most of the problems I ran into early on were like for personal shoots, when I was trying to like figure stuff out or figure lighting out, or, you know, it was like, okay, this didn't work. And, but when you're hired to do a certain thing. And if you don't know how to do that certain thing, you better learn how to do it really quick before you get in there, or you're not going to get hired again. And, you know, somebody's paying you whatever amount of money. It's $50 or $50,000. You know, that money needs to be, they need to have, feel that they have value for their purchase, and they need to feel that they can trust you as a professional to do the job and sort of exceed their expectations. So, that working under pressure like that was never a problem for me. because I was used to working under pressure in restaurants and sort of right. working on a foot on a photo shoot or in a studio or something like that. Like, as this is like so low pressure that, you know, I almost have to put more pressure on myself to make sure that I stay on point. Because it's so relaxed yeah. most of the time. And so not all shoots are relaxed, but if you're shooting, you know, if you're doing a fashion lookbook and you gotta get through 50 looks in a day, then you gotta stay on point. You gotta make sure that you're efficient and you have a system. And I think part of being a chef is, you know, being able to organize and have time management skills. And that correlates, you know, with big production shoots or even small production shoots. If you can time everything out and plan your day and say, like, all right, by 1 o'clock, we need to have X, Y, and Z done. And by 3 o'clock, we need to have these four other things done. And if we're not there, we need to, you know, make adjustments and things like that. And being detail oriented and being organized in a professional sense is like 9/10 of it. You know, the photography part, if you know how to light, you know how to work. If you know the basics of working with people and making photographs, the rest of it, you know, is all organization and time management. You know, and thinking about things.
You know, it's,
that maybe the producer didn't think of. If you don't have a producer, like, you're basically the producer, so is there, yeah. Do you have water on set? Do you have snacks? Do you have a place for models to change so they're not having to change in front of everybody? Or, you know, if you're shooting on location, do you have a screen so somebody can, you know, do things like that? It's just all the little sort of common sense things that people sort of gloss over and they don't really think about. If you can think about every possible scenario before you go into a shoot and say, like, if this happens, what am I going to do? If that happens, what am I going to do? If you have those, you don't have to yeah. write it down or anything, but if you're mentally, you know, checking off your list before you even get in the door, you're going to be way better off than half the other people out there.
That's very true. And it's funny, that was going to be actually one of my questions of how, like, maybe like transferable skills that you brought from, you know, the kitchen over into the photography world. And I guess that's really a good one. And I mean, it's so funny that you said that. I never really thought about it because in the moment, sometimes I get caught up in trying to get that perfect photo. And that's kind of my quote unquote pressure. But when yeah. you compare it to other maybe sorts of fast paced work, it's actually not that pressurized, you know?
No,
you kind of just take another picture if you don't get it right.
It can be, you know, and if the thing is, if you're trying to work out how to get something right while you're shooting, you've already lost. Like, you need to, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you got to get your buddies over and say, like, you know, we're going to set up a backdrop and a couple of lights and work, you know, I want to work all this scenario out to see how I need to light this ahead of time. Or, you know, in the bigger production mm-hmm. jobs, there's days where you can pre-light and you have all your sets and everything, you know. When everybody walks, the client walks on set, the talent walks on set, everything's ready to go. All you have to do is stick them in and then interact with that and then, you know, sort of adjust the client's expectations or, you know, if the client's reacting and saying, oh, and this isn't what I was looking for, then you're able to, you know, move on to the next thing. In a commercial sense, you know, if you're doing it for personal work, take all the time you want, you know, and make mm-hmm. the mistakes and that's how you learn anyways. Trying things out and seeing what works and what doesn't and what works for you and what you like and what you don't like. And, hopefully then you'll get hired to do things that you enjoy doing rather than, you know, we all get hired to do things that aren't in our wheelhouse. And you kind of wonder, be like, oh, have you seen my work? But at the same time, you know, I'm a professional. So if something is beyond my scope so drastically, like if somebody's like, I need you to do some underwater pictures, you know, somewhere, like, I'd be like, I'm not your guy, you know, like, you should call somebody else,
right.
You're gonna get fired for hiring me, you know. Or if somebody's like, oh, I need you to take some architecture photos of some building, I'm like, I'm not your guy, like, I wouldn't know the first thing about how to do that, so I'm not going to waste your time and money. But maybe that would motivate me to go shoot some architecture stuff and say, well, you know what, the next time you can call me and I'll know what I'm doing, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, details, like attention to detail, time management, organization, and the other thing is managing a team. You know, because it's not just you. Like, you've got an assistant, you've got hair and makeup, you've got, depending on the size, stylists, you've got producers, you've got all these different people who are going to be part of the team, art directors. This is on bigger shoots, but even if it's just you and a model and an assistant holding a reflector, like, how you interact with those people and how you direct those people, and if you're an asshole, it's going to show. You know, people aren't going to want to work with you, but if you treat people with respect and as part of the team, then, you know, whoever's working with you is going to speak well. You know, if you're working with clients, they're going to be like, oh, this guy was really great to work with. We enjoy being around him or her. They're pleasant to be, you know, to be on set with for 10 or 12 hours. That's going to go a really long way. But if you've got like, this huge attitude and you don't treat people well, you know, that it's a small world, and that word travels really fast. So, you know, that's the other thing. I think the final component of it is how you treat people and how you interact with them, especially with clients, and don't let them see a sweat, and you treat people nicely and with respect. And you can be firm and you can, you know, tell people what you need, but there's a nice way to do it and a pleasant way to do it, or there's an unpleasant way to do it. And that's, you know, the old saying, you get more flies with honey. So
that's true. And it's so one of the things for me, I think, and maybe portrait photographers on a whole can kind of relate to this, is sometimes, I guess, putting my subject at ease enough to get the photo, it depends, because the right photo could just be the photo that they want taken of them if it's, you know, more client oriented, and if it's more personalized, you might have something in mind that you're trying to draw from them. So in that latter scenario, how do you kind of get what you need out of a subject and kind of put them at ease and maybe bring those walls down a little bit, especially for those subjects who are very, you know, stone-faced and they don't like emotion sometimes?
I mean, it's really just about engaging them and, you know, it's a bit of psychological warfare sometimes, you know, and it's a lot of psychology involved. Not that I know that much about it, but just human interaction. You know, if you tell somebody, I want you to do this, and they don't want to do that, then they're not going to do it, you know, or it'll look contrived or fake or too forced. So what I basically do is I sit down and have a conversation while I'm shooting, you know, and I'm not just slamming pictures out, you know, I'm taking three or four pictures and then telling, you know, making adjustments for them and telling them, giving them some guidance on what I want to see out of them. It's more body position than emotion, things like that. Sometimes it's talking about what kind of emotion I'm looking for, but mainly it's just having a conversation. And then a lot of times I will have certain movements where I'll say, I want you to go from one thing to another, but what I'm really looking for is that thing in the middle between those two points. And it's, you can't really, there's no way to put that into that middle point into words. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But if you can get those walls down, you know, you're in good shape. But to get those walls down, that person has to believe you know what you're doing and believe that you know. You know, so a certain amount of confidence, without being arrogant, is always good. But if you're like, oh, my camera's not right, or the lights aren't right, let me go adjust this, and you start acting frantic and
I left the lens
you
cap
get flustered
on.
Yeah, if you get flustered, you know, we're all going to make mistakes and we all have to make adjustments and things are going to move and change. But if your demeanor, you know, people react to that, and your energy and your demeanor, and they're going to, if you're projecting confidence, they're going to believe you, and they're going to say, like, "All right, I'm gonna trust this person, and I'm in good hands." But if you're kind of acting squirrely and not focused on them, and you're more focused on your equipment and why isn't this working right, they're going to be like, "This person doesn't know what they're going to know what they're doing, and I'm wasting my time being here." So they're going to disengage, mm-hmm.
And their expression shows that.
Yeah, and they're going to, you know, you're not going to get anything good out of it, and, you know, but it's very much about how you're perceived by your subject, and also being able to be aware if they're uncomfortable with something. People aren't always going to say it, because they don't want to, it's easier just to kind of go along and, but if you can read somebody and read their body language, and it's like, "Oh, this is not working for you. Let's do something else." And they're going to go, "Oh, okay, great. This person is actually paying attention to me. And it's not just about, like, I'm not just a thing in front of a camera." You know, this is a very human interaction.
So if you had to, but in your mind, as you're thinking back, you know, I know you basically somewhat left the city behind now with your move, but out of those years that you spent in New York, were there any photo shoots in particular that stood out to you of just like, you know, this went, you know, really how I wanted to, and you were able to kind of get that image that really lasts a kind of long time?
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. And I find that, for me, the photos that I enjoy and I like the most and mean the most for me are always personal work. I mean, there are assignments that are fun. And, there are assignments that are fun and are great that I've made good pictures out of. But like the big commercial jobs I work on, it's like, it's not always the most exciting stuff to shoot, even though it's some of it's portraits, but it's whether it's for a big pharmaceutical company or a big ad campaign, like, it's not always the most exciting stuff to shoot. I mean, it pays well and it's great, but they're not always the most memorable images. But for me, I think, photographing Joseph Fiennes, for an editorial was pretty far up there. And I got to photograph, Chuck Close, the artist, at his house, as a bit of personal work. And there's a lot along over the years, you know, but I really appreciate every photo shoot. I appreciate people taking the time to work with me, and especially when I was, you know, just starting out, you know, I had no trouble asking people, like, "Hey, I'd love to photograph you. Would you be interested?" And if they said no, it was no big deal. And if they said yes, it was great. I was going to try to make the most of it. But overall, I mean, almost 10 years in New York, I'm really grateful for that experience, because it afforded me a lot of opportunities that I don't think I could have gotten elsewhere. Just, you know, as starting out. But I never really loved New York. I don't love New York as like a backdrop for photographs. Mm. And you know, professionally, it was great. You know, it was a great place to be, but I would have much rather lived somewhere else. You know, it was, you know, not so crowded, not so expensive, but that's the trade-off. Yeah. That's the trade-off. Like, you suffer your quality of life a little bit in the beginning, and you work in a place that has all these opportunities, and then I think once you sort of establish yourself, you can leave and go elsewhere, and still, you know, you take that experience with you, and then you can make pictures anywhere. But I don't think you necessarily have to move to New York to make it. There's plenty of people who have never lived in New York and have great careers. So I don't know if that really answered your question, but.
No, it did. And it's funny, because that you again I kind of touched on something I wanted to talk about, which was like the role, I guess, the city or the location can kind of play in your career. And I think, you know, for some people, they opt for one thing of like, okay, I have to get to this area to be able to work with these clients and get like this type of, like, they, I guess they have like kind of like a vision for it in their head that they're kind of chasing. And then you have other photographers or other artists and creators in general, I should say, who are just like, all right, well, no one else has really done it in this area, or this isn't really popular in this area, and that's valuable in its own right. You know, I want to be the first really major portrait photographer out of, you know, Alaska or whatever, you know, where you wouldn't really expect, you know, someone to come out of. And there's definitely value in that. And now after your move, what do you kind of, I know you're saying it's kind of temporary, but with the time that you do have out there now, what are you hoping to find or maybe accomplish from, you know, a creative standpoint out there that maybe you couldn't do in a place like New York?
I'm still trying to figure that out, because if all things were right in the world and we weren't in the middle of a epidemic and a, you know, a civil uprising and, you know, a crazy election time. I mean, there's a time. I mean, the biggest thing for me, is the limitations that just the health limitations of COVID-19. And, it's really hard to want to go out there and try to find work or find people to photograph right now, because I don't really want to put my life in danger, you know, from a disease, just to make a photograph. And, you know, there's some amazing photojournalists who are doing that every day, and I respect the hell out of for doing that, but, you know, that's not my background. And I don't know. I mean, right now, I think the biggest thing for us was to get to some place where we felt that, I don't know, I think there's going to be a really big second wave in New York as things open up. And the idea for us being locked in the apartment for another 4 or 5 months, just mentally was not going to be good for us. Is, you know, the one thing that we found out here so far is that, you know, at least there, you can go walk around your yard, and, you know, within 20 minutes of where we are, there's, you know, a bunch of parks and rivers and lakes, and you can get out in nature and not be near anybody. Whereas in New York, you can't go anywhere without being, you know, within 2 feet of somebody. You know, we had a park that was right down a block away from us. And we just, early on, we'd try to go for walks in the park, and it was just so crowded that it was like, this is not even worth it. So we basically just hunkered down for 4 months. And the first time we really got out was to drive across the country. And even just being in the truck for 7 days, and seeing the country, just, you know, the open space. And I think that helped both my wife and I, you know, out, you know, just our mental state. Just, there was a huge reprieve from being sort of locked down. But I'd really like to find some good stories to tell out here. I mean, we're sort of in the, foothills of the Sierra Nevada mountains. So there's a lot of ranches and farmland and things like that here, so I'd love to find some ranchers to photograph, and probably some migrant workers, and to sort of tell some of those stories. And I've always been enamored with Richard Avedon's In the American West series, which he basically just drove for a number of years, just drove around. He would make trips out through the West and photograph random people that he came about, and that's always been a really big inspiration for me. So I'd like to do some of that here, and then we'll just have to see what happens with the virus, because hopefully we can get back to making some commercial work at some point in the next year, but I don't know when that's going to happen. So I'm, you know, I've got to reach out to some agencies in LA and San Francisco and let people know that I'm out here. And I'm sure I'll be back to New York to work a little bit here and there. So, But a lot of what I do too is music and album packaging. And the music world is shut down right now too. So, till that sort of gets going again and musicians and the labels have money to spend, it's sort of hard to know what's going to happen next.
Yeah. You know, to kind of transition to, or kind of take a step back, I should say, to your, to kind of the first part of your answer, you know, that's one thing I thought it was going to be really interesting, you know, hearing about your move to this area that seems, you know, very different from New York in terms of actual, you know, location, layout, et cetera, but maybe to see how you can kind of bring your style and flavor that maybe was developed there and maybe use it to tell a story or create a photo or create something meaningful, you know, in this new area. You know, I thought that was going to be, I think that's an interesting challenge, but definitely provides some great possibilities and opportunities, you know, that's of things you could make, personal work.
Yeah, I think especially. There's probably some really interesting characters out here, and I've already seen a few people, you know, just driving around. I saw this guy on a motorcycle the other day, and he was like, you know, crazy long white handlebar mustache, and like oh, that guy would be great, and like, I don't know, just the people are a bit more weathered out here, and because it is, mm-hmm. The sun is really intense. but yeah, I think it'll be interesting, and I think taking the skill set that I have, you know, I can sort of drop that into anywhere, and as long as I can find some people, I can make some good photographs. So. But I think the hard part right now, because everyone is sort of locked down and being cautious, is trying to find people. And keep doing it in a way that is responsible. So.
Actually, that's actually what I wanted to touch on. Lastly, is how for you, I guess I'll start. And maybe also, if you want to kind of say your piece in terms of advice that you would offer to other people, how have you kind of stayed inspired during this time of, you know, it's not necessarily socially acceptable to be around people right now, and medically not acceptable either in terms of photographing and being, you know, in close proximity. How have you kind of stayed inspired in other ways? You know, have you kind of just been maybe looking back through old photos or taking in other people's art?
Yeah, I've looked at a lot of art, and mostly painters, and you know, a few photographers here and there. And I think with all that's been going in the world, going on in the world with both the virus and you look at the Black Lives Matters movement and all the protests that have been happening, it's sort of like, I've been so enthralled with keeping up with that and trying to, I don't know. I mean, I've been trying to listen and learn and be an advocate and support causes. And it sort of felt like my work didn't seem all that important. I mean, obviously I'm not making any work right now because I haven't had anybody to my house in 4 months to make work. And but I felt it was more of a time to look outward and not make things about me. You know, mm-hmm. it's a whole weird landscape to navigate, I think, but especially through social media, and you look at, you know, some people trying to do the right thing and getting called out, and some people doing the wrong thing and getting called out. And it's this sort of world that is, I think it's necessary, you know, with social media, and it's a really good way to get messages out and things like that. But, I don't even know where I'm going with all this, but for me, it's just like, I'm taking in a lot more than I'm putting out right now. And, you know, looking at artists who are making important work and looking at, you know, protesters and trying to support causes that are important, and trying to stand up to, you know, fascist government and things like that. You know, it's a weird time to be an artist, but I think it's a really important time to be an artist. I for one, am looking forward to being able to sort of dive into some of those themes and because my work at the end of the day is all about humanity. You know, it's about human interaction and human emotion, and there's a lot of that, a lot of emotion in the world right now. I think it's a really good time to express that. And, I don't know. Inspired is tough, I think, right now. I think, aware and motivated is, I think, more important than inspired at the moment.
No, what I was going to say was, that's really accurate. 'Cause I remember, maybe around 3 weeks. I can't even tell time anymore, but maybe around like a month ago.
It's a warp, man.
It's crazy. But, yeah, right around a month ago, I would say, I was kind of, it's funny because leading up to, coronavirus and then also the start of the protests and, I guess the flashlight being shined on all the injustices in our country, I was kind of heading in a pretty good direction creatively. I mean, when that kind of really kicked off and was rising and then eventually peaked, you know, maybe like a month ago, I would say, it really, just like how you were saying, it really made you kind of sit back and think, you know, priority wise and, you know, orientation of your life, what really is important and what really matters. And it's funny because during a time where there was such, you know, financial stress and economic hardship for so many people, it was really interesting to see how even the people who were struggling and not really in the best place in their own lives could also say, like, all right, well, still that we need to talk about that, you know, like that's still very important. And it was definitely encouraging for a while. It definitely left me, with just everything going on, left me dejected and sort of, I guess a little cold, honestly. But as I kind of start to see some of the powerful, well, one, powerful images and just stories come out of this, it also kind of makes you want to be, like you were saying, like active and just involved in however you can be. So, It's a silver lining, I guess, is the best way to say it.
From the virus is that everybody's home and they have time to be involved, you know, mm-hmm. They can go to a protest or they can go, you know, speak their mind because, you know, they may be out of work or their work is shut down or furloughed or whatever it may be, but you have a country, you know, this, I don't remember, a social movement as big as this since the 60s or early 70s. And I mean, what a time to be alive and what a time to see so many people say enough. Like, we're going to make this country better. And if you don't like it, we're going to drag you along the way anyway. You know, cause it's, I mean, evolution, I think is painful. And you know, I think we've got some real growing pains to go through for a while, but, what has been a sort of a beacon of light is to see how many people, how many young people and older people, coming together behind this movement and saying, like, you know what, like, equality for all, you know, it can't just be one way for one people and one way for the other. Like, this country, you know, is supposed to stand for something. It's time to follow through and, you know, it's that to me is inspiring, is to see how many people and how many young people are getting out there and speaking out and standing up for what they believe in. Because, you know, I'm the tail end of Generation X, like the very last of Generation X, which is pretty much the slacker generation. And then, you know, like, we were kind of built for COVID-19, like, yeah, we can stay home and watch TV, no big deal. But then you have, you know, millennials who get such a bad rap. But then you got Generation Z who's like militant and like out there, and you know, but all these people are coming together and saying like we're gonna do something, and that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and actually following through on it. It's incredible. Like you said, it's an incredible time to be alive, and I'm glad I'm alive for one, and then secondarily to that, I'm glad I'm an artist during this time in some regard, in some type of creative voice. But the last thing I kind of wanted to touch on for you, when it comes to, you know, maybe, and I like asking creators that are the creators I have on to answer this question, when it comes to advice that you'd maybe give to someone who's maybe just starting out in this period, this period is really crazy because of everything going on, but people who are just kind of starting their creative journey, what advice would you kind of offer to them, creatives of any type of field, not necessarily photographers, you know, do you think there's kind of lessons that anyone can benefit from when they're starting a creative life, I guess you could say?
The biggest one is to not be afraid to make mistakes, you know, and you don't have to feel like you have to show all of them either, you know, like I think the social media world that we live in, everything has to be like, I'm going to take a picture and I'm going to post it immediately, and like, you know, you don't have to post everything that you shoot, and like, take the time to make mistakes and learn from them, and then, you know, if you're going to fail, you might as well fail big and go big, you know, and that those failures and those things that go wrong are going to teach you more than the shoots that go easy and everything goes right. And the other thing I think is, you know, study what you do and whatever, whether it's street photography or product or whatever it is, like look at what's been done. And say like, all right, what can I bring to this medium, and what can I do that's original? You know, it's so hard. Like nothing is original anymore. Music, art, movies, you know, it's all
right.
Bits of things that are regurgitated and bits and pieces of things that we pull together and say like, all right, well, you know, what do I like and what do I don't like? And what can I bring? What perspective can I bring to this that maybe nobody else has? And that sort of leads me to the final thing. And like you're the only person who sees the world like you do. No one else can see through your eyes. No one else can feel what you felt. I mean, we share emotions and things like that, but your experience is singular in the world. Like no one else can have your experience. So it's your job as an artist or creative or a photographer to express your experience, your vision, through your art. So, you know, everybody else is already taken, so just be yourself. And that's I think what makes art interesting, is because, you know, you and I could photograph the same person and they would be wildly different photographs because of your life experience and my life experience, or your creative vision and my creative vision are going to be very different because we're two different people, you know? And I think that's what makes it interesting. It's good to imitate other things and other styles, like someone else's work, to learn the mechanics of how to do that. But when it comes to being creative and being visionary, like you have to your job is to show other people what you see and how you see it. You know, I'd say that's probably the biggest piece of advice, not to be afraid to show it.
No, I agree. And you know, it takes, it's funny because someone could have told me that when I first started taking photos or, you know, doing creative things in general, and I probably still would have ended up taking the long way and the long path that I took already, you know, just being so like hard-headed, and sometimes you have to feel instead of hear. But I do think it's important, you know, for someone with your level of experience, or just anyone really who has any experience, to kind of share it, and to at least to tell someone who's maybe a little bit earlier on in their journey of just like, this is something you can do to maybe better yourself and hopefully get to that end goal, or maybe just reach the next level in whatever you're trying to do a little bit quicker. So thank you for your
no problem. There's one other thing I appreciate Chuck Close said, and he said, this is one of my favorite quotes. He said, "Inspiration is for amateurs. The rest of us just go to work." And it sort of means, like, you know, the best ideas come out of the process. Like, if you're out there working and you're working through shoots or you're working through paintings or whatever, you know, you're going to come up with ideas that you would never have thought of if you weren't in the process during the moment. You know, if you're trying to just sit in your room and say, like, I want to do this photo and this photo, you'd have never, like, there could be an opportunity that pops up with somebody who does something or brings something to the shoot or whatever that would have never been possible if you weren't doing the work. So, it's important to just keep doing the work. You know, he told me as I was leaving, he's like, just keep going, just keep doing it. You know, I was like, is that kind of an insult or is that, but he said, no, you know, keep trying, kid. Yeah, no. But it was sort of like, just keep pushing, keep doing work, you know? At least that's how I took it.
I like that. I think that's the better interpretation. Well, this was a lot of fun, Josh. I appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me. It was it was definitely an informative discussion. And I hopefully the listeners took something at least away from these, you know, this past hour we've been talking. And of course, if you'd like to connect with Josh Wool on Instagram, pretty easy to find. You got one of those nice tags that's just perfectly aligned with your name. Excellent branding. That was my interview with Josh Wool. Really cool guy, right? After not doing a podcast for a while, it felt great to be back behind the mic and just talking to someone so genuine. And also, quick note on scheduling. As I try to get more and more awesome guests, there will be some delays with episodes coming out. So expect an episode every other week going forward. And I actually have an awesome guest lined up for early August. So that's going to be really cool. But yeah, just want to give you guys a heads up on that. But anyway, thank you for listening and I'll catch you in the next episode. Peace.